busy morning, so I'm looking forward to the conversation. This morning, I'm in the distinguished company of the balded gentleman who goes by the name of Dennis Johnson. He will be the person that will answer the telephone and put you through. Of course, you know the call number is 434-1790. If you don't know it by now, certainly you should have it well ingrained in your mind, 434-1790. You can email me on peter.w.wickham@gmail.com, or alternatively, you can use the chat, 266-IVOB. I normally have access to the chat, and when we get that going, I can directly respond to you and you can make comments about whatever is on your mind. And on the subject of what's on your mind, well, first let me apologize for the 5-minute challenge that we had. I was having some difficulty getting the technology working this morning, so entirely my fault. The link I was trying to establish was an old link and not a new link, but we got the link working and we are firmly in contact, and we are hoping that we'll have a busy Tuesday morning and then a busy Tuesday afternoon. Wow. Yesterday's throne speech. Now, where do we begin? Well, I was one of many who was saying that I wasn't convinced that a throne speech was necessary in terms of what the Prime Minister wanted to achieve. I think that legally we are still in a position where we can say that the Prime Minister did not have to have the throne speech. The fact that the Prime Minister had the throne speech, however, has created a situation in which we can now analyze not necessarily whether she needed to or not, but whether or not on the outcome as a result of that throne speech. I've expressed the view that it is part of the Prime Minister's whole idea that she wants to send a signal that her administration will not be one of many, that she's moving in an entirely different direction. And I certainly think that the outcome of yesterday suggests that she has achieved that. So she has signaled several things, and one of which is that we are going to finally become a republic. This is a conversation that Dennis is very familiar with, having been part of the Brung to Brastak's team back in the day when we would have discussed this in 1998 and 1999. We talked about going to a referendum, or whether or not we should have a referendum, and eventually it all came to nothing. I am convinced on this occasion that this will not come to nothing, this will come to something, and that the Prime Minister will do that which she has promised, and that we will become a republic before our 55th anniversary of independence. I'm hoping that while she's at it, she'll move Nelson in the process. But anyhow, there we go. That's my sense. I'm happy that she has not indicated that we're going to a referendum for that purpose, because I am thoroughly convinced that that is entirely unnecessary. So we will go straight towards a referendum, and I think that that's a good thing. So that was one of the significant points that was made in the conversation. We will now have to begin looking at the form that the referendum, the form that the republic will take, whether we will go with a parliamentary republic where the parliament continues to maintain power. We have a situation that's similar to Trinidad and Tobago, where we vest the power in the parliament, and then we allow parliament to choose a president, as is the case may be. That person is given a contract of employment, similarly to the Trinidad and Tobago president, to run for 3 to 5 years. That would be the way that it could go. One way or the other, we're pretty sure that this governor general will be the last. And then we will have to start thinking about whether she will become a president, or indeed whether we will have a different person and who that person could be. Forms of republican government are many, and we can discuss many of those. But my sense is that with a timeline as tight as the one the Prime Minister has set for us, we will probably just become the a republic in the context of the Trinidad model, which is relatively easy to achieve. Then there's the whole question of national heroes. We're going to have a couple more, we're told. I'm not sure whether it will be a couple, as in two, or whether it will be several more, as in several. That is, of course, left to be seen. I have my own ideas of the types of people who can become national heroes. My sense, however, is that certainly the Prime Minister will be looking to add a woman to the list of national heroes. This is other than herself, of course, so let's not be distracted by that suggestion. So I have some ideas on who a possible woman could be, as a woman who is non-political. And I think that that will be an idea as to who will be that. So maybe if you want to talk about that later in the program, we can have that conversation. I know that all of you are anxious to discuss the issue of decriminalization of marijuana, and also the question of same-sex marriages. As always, I'm open to the conversation, and you can call, and if you want, you can raise aspects of that with me. I see that my good friend, the senator, is confused over the issue, and he's indicating that there needs to be clarity. I think that the senator is, Senator Franklin, is confused because he wants to be confused. I noticed that his leader express similar levels of confusion. To me, the situation is really quite clear. The Prime Minister will hold a referendum on the question of same-sex marriage. People will be given the opportunity to decide whether they want to support that or not. But the Prime Minister has indicated that they will be moving towards the recognition of other unions. I don't know if many of you will realize this, but just recently, the Cayman Islands government passed a piece of legislation that essentially allowed same-sex couples identification that's similar to what is allowed under the Family Law Act. So you have unions other than marriage, and of course there are various types. This will now become one of those types of unions that will allow persons who are so designated to wittingly, in this case, well, unwittingly would be the case for the Family Law Act, wittingly identify a partner with whom the law would respect and acknowledge that that person is with. And that is, one could argue, a lower level form of identification. And I should make the point that in my own case, it was an option that was available to me. The state of Italy, my partner is Italian, offers the idea of a civil union to gay couples, but not to straight couples. The only option that's available to straight couples is that of marriage. Italy does not recognize gay marriage, and Italy offers the union called the civil union, which will ultimately be what we're going towards, to couples who are of the same sex that want to be identified, to be yoked. The challenge with it is that there's really not a whole lot of difference in terms of what it qualifies you for, because based on the Strasbourg decision, while the ladies who went forward for that decision were told that it was not a human rights matter as such, because marriage is not a human right, nonetheless, they are entitled to treatment that is no different under the law of Italy. So as a result, you're entitled to the civil union. That effectively has settled the issue in that case. In the case of France, they offer you both. You can have whichever you want. Whether it's same sex, opposite sex, it doesn't matter. You can have both. We opted for the higher level because that was the one that we were more comfortable with. But certainly there are places in which you can go the direction of the civil union. United Kingdom, similarly, offers straight and opposite sex couples the opportunity to do the civil union or to do gay marriage. So the situation to me is not one that lacks clarity. It offers clarity, and the clarity is very clear. That persons who are of the same sex who want to have a civil union in Barbados very shortly will be allowed to do so, in much the same way that persons who live together for 5 years in Barbados are considered married by the state. The situation with gay marriage, however, is something that would be subject to a referendum. I have my own views on that, and certainly I'd be happy to share them as we go along. But it's been an interesting conversation so far online and in other places, and I'm anxious to get on with that conversation today. I realize that we are 40 minutes past, and I've already spoken for more than 10 minutes. I just want to say to you, though, that I did what I promised I would do. I wrote the Barbados Water Authority on the occasion of my last program, which was a fortnight ago. I said to them that I am not now receiving electronic billing, and it would be my intention to switch to electronic billing as soon as possible. 3 days later, I received a note from customer care, and I wrote customer care just like anybody else. I received a note from customer care advising me that I had been switched to electronic billing and that my outstanding balance is X, and that I will receive future bills from that medium and not by way of post. So I am happy. One could argue that the electronic systems are working, or clearly working well, as I said. I did not give any indication. Of course, they knew who I was, but I don't believe that that had anything to do with it. 3 to 4 days, I got back a response having addressed that issue. So that is the reality. 434-1790, good morning and welcome to the first caller.
Good morning.
Good morning and welcome.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good morning and welcome. You're on the air.
Hello. Okay, I'm here. Can you hear me? I'm talking. Can you hear
me? Well, I'm fairly sure that there are quite a few people out there who want to get into the program. So are you there, sir?
I am speaking. Yes, hello, 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 hello. I'm here.
Good morning, Auntie America. How are you, sir?
Good morning. How are you doing?
Hearing you loud and clear, sir. How are you?
Oh, yeah. But see, if you don't respond a certain way, I'm not going to know if I'm actually on. So you can hear me.
You're on. I'm hearing you on. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. That's fine. You know, I've heard thrown speeches, let's say, from the Queen of England, and she's had to put up with all kinds of governments from different sides, and she's always had to make statements that will suggest, because I think she edits the speeches that are given to her to make sure that she doesn't show any particular, you know, lean or bias towards one particular, to the Tories or the other one, the Liberals or whoever else they call themselves, the Labour. So she always has to be down the center when she speaks about my government. And her job really and truly is to do nothing. And I really think that she's an unnecessary encumbrance on taxpayers, but that's my personal opinion. Here in Barbados, I don't think it's that obvious. I think when the governor generals give speeches or thrown speeches, they always seem to show a distinct bias, obviously in favor of the incumbent. And of course, that is so very wrong. But for me, it works. It works because it says in real terms, you really don't need a head of state. Because if you have someone there who speaks so much in favor of the present administration, in her case, it was too obvious because she was using words like the lost decade, you know, terms like that and so on. So you know she was clearly representing a political position as opposed to, you know, a position of a statesperson. It says to me that there really is no need for her office, period. So if you want to go, I don't mind the Republican thing, that is all well and good, but can Barbados really afford a ceremonial position? I would think that moving towards Republic should mean the Prime Minister is clearly the head of state. The Prime Minister is the head of everything. That is the kind of power that the Prime Minister has. When you read how even the Governor General is selected, it speaks about, you know, referring to the opposition leader for advice and stuff. By the end of the day, the responsibility for the selection of the Governor General falls directly into the lap of the Prime Minister. All powerful. So I'm thinking, do we really need to have this head of state when the head of state is already the Prime Minister? I mean, for all intents and purposes, even the Governor General seems to report directly into her. So, or him, depending on whoever the person is. So I don't mind the Republic thing. I really don't. I mean, you can't move Lord Nelson, but you go into Republic. But that's fine. Let me go to Republic. But then you're going to be discussing whether we should have a ceremonial head of state. We don't. What is going to happen, surely, is that no one will have, at that level, will have any kind of their responsibility that says that they can make decisions. You know, there will be no executive powers at all at that level. That you can, of course, no one will ever outstrip a prime minister in Barbados. So why even bother with the title of head of state? If they were saying, okay, we're going to have a showing to say, okay, we want to become a Caribbean state. We really need to have a Caribbean state. And you want to make a first step in that direction. The best way to do is to repatriate the powers of head of state from the Queen to a Caribbean person. And so all the English-speaking, probably the French-speaking people can say, well, this person represents where we want to go with this thing. And then perhaps, and they all contribute, of course, to that person's upkeep and the staff that they have and everything else, and perhaps they may have the powers to determine who get a title or two or, I don't know, or who becomes judges or whatever. Give them some kind of executive power. But it would be a Caribbean head of state. And then, of course, I would have no problems with that there. But to bring a head of state and make it a Barbadian head of state with no executive powers, when in fact the true head of state is the Prime Minister, to my mind, it's an absolute waste of money. I make all that. I know you.
As is often the case, Anti-America, I think that you're spitting hairs today. And let me ask you a couple of very simple questions. One, are you not happy that we have finally had an indication that we are moving away from the British system where the Queen is the head of state as a first step? And I certainly would want to identify with your thinking that the idea of having a head of state that does nothing is perhaps a waste of resources. And in time, maybe we can move towards an executive presidency that's similar to that of the United States. The question that I would ask, though, is do you not think that having to do both at this point in time within the space of a year might be a bit much for the people of Barbados to handle, especially as we are already being told that they will have to accommodate the idea of becoming a republic, perhaps moving Nelson, and a few other things in the context of what has to happen now, and maybe the idea of getting rid of the head of state might be the first step, and then later we can consider other things. What do you think?
I think the important thing about Barbados that needs to be understood is that the overwhelming majority of people are younger than independents. They're not old people are dying. Hey, thank you for being around. I see you in heaven or hell, wherever you come from. You know, you retired people, move along. The younger people now have a responsibility now to move this place forward. And there's no more time for baby steps anymore. You know, young people don't deal with baby steps. Huh? Every year you got about 5,000 or 6,000 people moving from 16 to 17, becoming eligible voters, and they're going to be telling you, you're going to be telling them, oh, let me move forward slowly. That's old people thing. Them, like Dennis Johnson, alone. Dennis, I see you in heaven, my man. You and Devin are all with us. I'm only 25 years old. We don't want baby steps. We're moving forward big time. You know, what you say, Peter, makes sense. It would have made sense 20 years ago, but no, with these millennials coming through, no. If you can do four things, as you say, what a program.
For the avoidance of doubt, though, Anti-America, can I record the fact that you support the idea of us becoming a republic, just for the record?
Most certainly. Of course.
Thank you. And on that note, sir, I will wish you a blessed and wonderful good morning. Thank you, sir. Thank you for calling. It was good chatting with you. Down to brass tacks. I have some WhatsApp messages I want to read and just try to get on top of those from earlier this morning. First person is saying, was this throwing speech written by the Governor General or the Prime Minister? Look, let's clarify something. The throwing speech has always been written by the government and it is given to the Prime Minister to read. I heard Anti-America talking about the fact that the Queen edits the throwing speech. That, to my knowledge, is absolute nonsense. The Queen reads what is given to her to read. Thankfully, in her instance, because of her advanced age, they never give her a speech that takes longer than 8 minutes. I do not believe that the Queen would have read a speech that took 2 hours in the way that our Governor General did. And I certainly would commend our Governor General for having the intestinal fortitude to read something that was so long that she probably only got the morning. So the idea of it being a political statement, let's be clear, the throne speech is the most political of statement. It's the intention of a government regarding its legislative agenda. And the understanding is that it would always have been political. So I don't get this argument that Anti-America is making and that other people are making on the chat about whether it was the Governor General's speech or the Prime Minister's speech. It is always the Prime Minister or the government speech that is given to the Governor General to read. And the second person says, Peter, what will Barbadians abroad be able to ever vote? Can CARICOM nationals who reside legally in Barbados be allowed to vote? Plenty of UWA professors, not your partner, Peter. Your husband, partner is for unmarried people. The benefits of marriage, like inheritance and making end-of-life decisions, should be considered human rights. Excellent points that you've made. My sense is that persons who are normally entitled to vote would be able to vote in this referendum that is being proposed. Good morning and welcome to Down to Brass Tacks.
Good morning, sir.
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Greetings and salutations to your good self. Let me first say that I am 100% in favor of your preamble this morning. I think it can be found in Proverbs 15:9-21. Quote, a wise person is hungry for knowledge, while the fool feeds on trash. End of quote. If you let me serve you right, sir, where I am fully aware that it does, you should recall that during a previous conversation, I asked the question leading up to just over a year, how close was it to the completion of the statue of Suarez? The question was left unanswered, but I am happy to learn that on Independence Eve, it's going to become a reality. However, I truly hope that the unfortunate mishap which had taken place denying the knighthood with Sir Gordon Grimage, that of prolific opener, Mr. Desmond Hayes, would be corrected at this year's Independence celebration.
All right. Thank you so much, sir, for that contribution. We all know who you're talking about. Let's see if that happens. And greetings and salutations to you too, sir. Dr. Brastax, good morning.
Good morning, Peter. How are you?
I'm good, sir. Yourself?
Well, I'm as always and as usual. Now, I want to know something, though. This joint republic, if it's going to solve the president, their problems, if all the tribulations that people are now going through, if those will suddenly disappear or eventually disappear. About the reshuffling and all that.
Can I just ask you quickly, what are your current tribulations that you face? I know one of them has been partially solved, which is the bus situation. What other tribulations are you concerned about, sir?
People being out of work, and they can see a pregnant cabinet that's doubly pregnant.
Pregnant?
And, yes, pregnant. Too many ministers. Oh. Right? Now, I don't know what kind of mass exists in these times. Right? I would have thought anything that was criticized by the last administration would have been put right. They have not. And the only people who are affected is the small man. I hear people talking about the reshuffle. I don't care now about the reshuffle. I want reduction. If you're going to criticize 17, then you should got 12. I am not, most Belgians are impressed by the way people talk. I am impressed by what people do. Anybody can talk. Anybody, it's not a hard thing, you know. And I always tell people, an impression is just like an illusion. It fades. Mm-hmm. You understand? And that's the reality.
Mr. P, yeah. I don't know. Can I respond to what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm done. Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. P, I want to concede that the status of republic will mean a lot more to people like me than it would be to people like you. Republic is all about optics. It's all about how people feel about themselves. It's all about an emotion. Practically, and I'm not going to run from this issue because this is something that I've always argued in the past. Practically, Barbados being a republic will make no fundamental difference to your life. So you will continue to have issues with water, issues with the pregnancy of the cabinet, as you call it, although I think that that is an unfortunate way that you've characterized our cabinet, because you're suggesting that the pregnancy of a cabinet is akin to having too many. And I would like to think that a person who is in a state of pregnancy is in a state where they are ready to give birth to much, which one could argue is what the Prime Minister is suggesting that our cabinet is it. Clearly, based on the very ambitious agenda that she's laid out, they're doing a lot of work, and there's a lot more work to be done. So pregnancy is probably not an appropriate term in the way that you've used it. But look, your life is not going to be fundamentally different when Barbados becomes a republic. I think that for me, I will feel a lot more proud of my country and the fact that we are no longer swearing in allegiance to the Queen, her heirs and successors. People like Auntie America will be a lot happier that he does not have to swear allegiance to the Queen, her heirs and successors. And we essentially will have our own country and our own country to run in the way that we are. But I do acknowledge that there is a gap between the persons like me who, one could argue, have the comfort of being happy about these types of things, and the person who has to stand at the bus stop in St. John for 3 or 4 hours waiting for a bus in the rain, that for her, that type of thing is probably less important. I accept that. But there's really no reason why, as a country, we can't walk and chew gum at the same time. We can remove Nelson, become a republic, and also deal with issues of transportation and water pressure for people in St. John. You get the final word, Mr. P.
Peter.
Final word to you. Go ahead.
My concerns have always been and always be people. You understand? It's like some things that happened in the past where you had a political party trying to fight everybody go under our wing. But you know what? You still go about one to the situation. Things just don't disappear. My final thing here, and this is a response to Mr. Kamabat, the traffic man. Now, I have traversed the Ranamak Highway almost every day. And yes, there has been a backup of traffic. Yes, I would deny it. But the move, and you know what? Those people who come from St. Taylor's and Westmoreland can now exit those junctions in complete safety. People who want to cross the road can now cross the road in safety. You understand? I always put people first. Now, about the new buses, I compliment the government on that. It's unfortunate that Dr. Duguay wasn't the one who would have been the officiating minister because he spearheaded it. But I have one problem, one question. Those air conditioned buses, when the air conditioned start working, saying that the bus have no windows, that means there'll be petrol service. So whenever the air conditioned gets fixed, and we know government buy, government build, but government don't ever maintain. So
yeah. Okay. Thank you, Mr. P, for your pronouncements and acknowledging your support for the issue of the buses. I want to thank you so much. I'm trying to move things a little more briskly today with Dennis's assistance because we actually have a lot to do. And I was begging for a little more time and they've already told me that that's not an option. So, down to brass tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Wickham. How are you doing?
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm glad I got you. I don't want you long. Mr. Wickham, I hear people say that the present speaker of the House can't win back his seat. But listen.
The present speaker is what?
The present speaker of the House cannot win back. Not the speaker, the opposition leader can't win back his seat. But the opposition leader got a seat here waiting for he. You know the opposition leader got a church in Moya, which is Maryland, and he got a church in Station Hill.
I only know about the one in Station Hill.
But he got one in Moya here. He got a church in Moya that abandoned. He left this one and he went down the road. So all he got to do is come back home, call the dissatisfaction of the people in this constituency. He got a clear seat to win. Because he's one way ready. We know you're ready. He's one way. Come back home and win a seat. Don't go down to St. Michael West. Don't go down there. Don't stop down there. Come back to St. Michael Central. Your church down Station Hill. And you left a church in this gap that people know you're ready. And you got a heart. You're a priest. You got a heart. Come back home and win a seat. There's so much dissatisfaction in this constituency that that's an easy for the opposition leader.
Let's be clear. No, I hear you, but let's be clear. The person, the Speaker of the House, won almost 3,000 votes in that constituency. The person who ran against him did not make 1,000. So you're saying that you believe the current leader of the opposition, Mr. Atherley, Bishop Atherley, give his correct title. Yeah. Bishop Atherley can leave government, can leave Station Hill. He can leave Station Hill and come down the road to St. Michael Central, open back the church, and he can turn around 2,000 votes on that basis. They got 2,000 people as attend that church?
You got me wrong. You don't understand what I'm saying.
Okay, help me.
Right now, the opposition leader is in St. Michael West. He down St. Michael. His church is in Station Hill. So the people around there know him.
Okay.
The people in this constituency know the Speaker of the House. Not the Speaker, but the opposition leader. And the dissatisfaction that's in this constituency, he gone.
He gone?
The Speaker gone?
Sorry. Who has gone, just out of curiosity?
So he can, the opposition leader can turn around 4,000 votes in this.
Who has gone other than the speaker?
But listen, I can't deal with the boss. I can't deal with what you're wrong. I know the rest.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
I speak for myself. That's useful
information. I will add that to my dossier when I'm ready to do the analysis of constituencies. So thank you for that information. The contention is that the speaker is doing badly. So the hope is that Bishop Atherley will come down from on the hill of Station Hill, come down into St. Michael Central and rescue his flock in St. Michael Central that are being currently led by the Speaker of the House in a direction that they would not like. So he should come and rescue his flock and take them over to the promised land, that being the land of the PDP. Dr. Brastax, good morning.
Good morning, Peter.
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
Very good, very good.
Good, good.
Now, I am going, you know, you and I am going to take a different line this morning, but I want you to remember, I always tell you that a five-year term has only a value of 3 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
With all of these programs that are going, we are approaching the third year, which will be May next year. I would left, and I would wait to see how these things are going to come into, I would say, reality. But I'm not going on that here this morning. I want to do my observation. And then I sat yesterday. This is one of the first times in my life that I sat behind a TV for so long. And I listened and made my observation of this throne speech. I must first compliment the former Prime Minister, Randall Stewart, for making the choice of Governor General Sandra Mason. She has shown the mettle. I don't think another general, Governor General, where he was choosing Governor General, could have stood up to that 2.5 hours yesterday. And I compliment her. And I compliment the people of St. Philip. They should feel proud of the stand and the performance of Sandra Mason. That lady, for 2.5 hours, spoke before even drinking a glass of water. She is the daughter of a fisherman. And I feel that the people of St. Philip should be very proud of the medal of that lady. Now, my observations now, as when I saw Parliament, have anything changed since the days of the colonial system pertaining to Speaker and the things that were done? They are still being done on the old colonial system, right or wrong? Peter?
You're asking me if anything has been done? No, not to the best of my knowledge. It's pretty much the same way. The speaker doesn't wear a wig anymore. I think that's one of the things.
We had Neville Maxwell that didn't wear no wig either.
Oh, Neville Boxer never wore a wig neither?
Neville Maxwell.
I didn't realize that Neville didn't wear a wig.
He belongs to an African thing. When I saw Trevor Prescott with this thing wrong in neck, he put me in mind of Neville Maxwell. With the thing on his head in Parliament. Now, let me say this. When I saw the performance yesterday, all that happened, all the talk about colonialism, is that we have played draft. We removed the white colonialist, but the black man is still doing the same ordeal as what the colonialists used to do. And it performed very well. Now, the other thing that, in my observation, I am proud today that Sir Lloyd Sandiford is still alive. When you look at the building that was so heavily criticized as the White Elephant, a waste of money, it has played such a vital role that Sir Lloyd should today. I saw him on TV at the funeral of the late Prime Minister. And I believe Sir Lloyd should have the strength to put down the walker and walk high today to see that his idea of that building has come to fruition. And it is a building that reaping finance right through. That is my observation yesterday. So it tells us that when politicians come to be the electorate, and make some accusations, and we as electorate do not think we will remain fools like a donkey in the middle of Broad Street. But yesterday, Bill, that building has played a vital role in 2020. Now, let me go a little further on of my observation. Now, I felt it was unfair to the Governor General. Now, when I heard her make statements such as the last decade, I think it was an injustice to the Governor General. Let me say why I think it was an injustice.
Please do.
Each government she heads is her government. To come out and to say that your last government was a lost decade. And now come today. Look, she got to be more serious than this. That was strictly a political speech. And I can finish on this note, Peter. I want you, I want the economists, I want the electorate, because we have a lot of university graduates, to be mindful of statements that are being made. I heard her also write, I mean, she don't write it, that this that Barbados is the third highest indebted country in the world. It is time. I heard Dr. Greenwich from the IMF said the same thing. It is time that they come to the public and educate the public. Peter, tell me, if after 2018, the 10 years that was placed with the Democratic Labour Party, could the impressions, let me put it this way, Dr. Haynes always said impressions is a serious thing. The impression that I got yesterday was that the last administration of the last decade has plunged this country to be the third highest indebted country in the world. That is an impression. But I want to more or less change that idea. I want to bring some truth. This has nothing to do with the Prime Minister administration. Now, let me say this. Now, it was said prior to the winning of the 2018 election that the Democratic was so financially bad off that nobody would lend them money. Could you come and explain to me, or the economists, or anybody in finance, to explain to the country how this debt was accumulated and at what time it was accumulated? Because it is important. It is obvious that I don't have the time to look up my papers, but I recall very well that in 2007, the former Prime Minister, Owen Seymour Arthur, may he rest in peace, said this country was in so much debt that he would not be borrowing any more money. Now, if a country was run by a former administration and it could not borrow money, could it subscribe to the increase in debt of the country?
You're finished the contribution?
Yes, I asked a question. So right.
Okay, I wanted to, because I wanted to give you an opportunity to completely finish. You said a lot. You talked about the fact that the Governor General was from St. Philip. I actually didn't realize that she was a Philippine, that she handled herself well yesterday. And I would agree with you, because I think to read a 2.5-hour speech is a tall order. So I would agree. Your concerns about her reading statements that suggested that the last government of which she represented was a lost decade. I have some reservations about the extent to which you need to be concerned. Bear in mind, the Governor General, as the Queen always says, it's not the person, it's the office. So the office that she holds represented the highest level of the previous government. The office that she holds represent the highest level of the current government. It is the opinion of the current government that the previous government represented a lost decade. Indeed, it's the opinion of the vast majority of people in Barbados that the previous government represented a lost decade. So I think that for her to express that view on the part of her government, there's not a problem there, because tomorrow her government could change and it would also still be her government. The Queen has represented several different governments, and I mean, they have all been hers, and they have all, at one point in time or the other, been critical of the government that has preceded them and that has come after. The last point you were making, though, about your concerns about the level of debt and the fact that the debt situation is still what it is. We're 2 years in. I think that an assessment of the debt had to be prefaced to the comment about us essentially arresting the BRRRR program and arresting the rescheduling of debt, and for the time being going in the direction of saying that we may have to loosen up a bit in terms of borrowing simply because of the COVID situation, and that has changed those realities. So that, I'm assuming, is a justification. And let you, I don't have a difficulty with a lot of those things and the fact that, you know, her government and that type of thing. I don't really see the big to-do there. What I am concerned about, though, what I would tell you is a hard thing for a person to essentially be reading a letter of termination, because ultimately that is what that 2.5 hour speech was. It pretty much said that she would be out of a job by the 55th anniversary of Barbados, unless, of course, she is fortunate enough to be considered for the post as the first president, in which case she creates history. So that's the part of it that I was saying, you know, I mean, unless you have that information before, to read that out in public, I mean, it's kind of rough. It's going to say, you know, like, my work getting that way. So that part I can see. But the rest of what you were saying, I don't know that it has to be any major concern. Final word to you, sir.
Yeah, so as I started, I want you to use, you know, I always tell you a theoretical and practical. Now, I heard the leader of the opposition said it is a political indicator that elections will soon be called. Now, I want to ask you, with all of these promises that came out yesterday, and with 2 years to go, could we look forward? I mean, what I have noted, and it can't vex her as a prime minister, she has never given a date for any of these programs to start. And what is important, that not having a date, you cannot accuse her of saying it has a started up date. But from my reality, with 2 years to go, you have one more active year politically, and you've got to prepare for the election. I would like to know how much of these programs will be able to come on stream within the next 24 months. Because you only got 24 months. Yes. Then you take out the Christmas recession, the house going on recession, and such like, there's little time. But there's a question I want you to prepare for me next time you'll be on. Parliament was closed for the last couple of months. Information reaching me is that a particular parliamentarian is being affected when she to go to Parliament. Could you shut down a whole Parliament because of one person that costing the taxpayers? I would like to know how much money it is costing the government because of that one person. And if you don't think it would have been better if that person tendered her resignation or his resignation and allowed the business of Parliament to go on, but to uphold one out of 30 and put the expenditure on the taxpayers, I don't think it is fair. I think if that person is not there, nobody
is. I think you're being unfair. You're being unfair. I think you're being unfair. And let me say this. I was planning to give you the last word, but I can't let you walk away with that. Look, if Parliament is a sick building, and the sickness is being reflected in one person, it doesn't necessarily mean that the other people are not sick. It's just that she get to the finishing line first. If it is that her system is more sensitive than mine, right? And it means that she is reflecting the sickness now. There's no guarantee that in 10 years' time, everybody else in there may not get sick too. So the point is that what we should do.
Peter,
sir, I listen to you. Listen to me.
Listen
to me.
Let me finish what I'm saying. Then you can continue. Are you assuming? If you were working in a company.
But you know who it is, and you know who it is too. Is it she? Is it a woman? A lady. It's a lady. It's a lady.
Shut down a whole parliament for one person. She is not a minister. She is not the prime minister.
She is entitled. She has been elected to sit as a member of Parliament, and she is so entitled to sit as a member of Parliament. The conditions of Parliament, sir. Look, if someone who is disabled is elected to Parliament, how is that person going to get up the stairs? How is that person going to get up the stairs? And I would argue, if a disabled person was elected to Parliament, Parliament will go and move and meet somewhere else, because you cannot deny. You cannot deny the opportunity for a person to sit in Parliament because Parliament is not capable of housing that person. And then that's the problem with Parliament. You gotta fix the problem. So if it was a disabled person, you would fix the elevator. If it is a sick building, you'll find out the cause of the sickness and you'll fix that, and all of them could go back in there and sit down. Sir, look, let me end this call and go on about your business. We can't go down that road. I'm not comfortable with that. I am really not comfortable with that. Down to brass tacks. I have a WhatsApp message here I want to read. The person is saying, Peter, I have no problem with Barbados wanting to be a republic, and I understand why. My question is whether Barbados gets a lot of tourists and investors, and do you think it will still have the economic engine contributing to Barbados when you become a republic? Also, I think you have to be very careful when you become a republic, as the Chinese is slowly and nicely moving into the islands of the Caribbean. I hope the pendulum doesn't swing to the communist side. An unfortunate association of events there. Certainly, China is a communist state, but I don't really know that they have been spreading communism, and I don't know that that's a danger that we face. I think the other point is that when people think of republics, we always think about Trinidad and Tobago, we think about Guyana, but we don't realize the United States is a republic, and so is Dominica. But Dominica is a commonwealth, which I think is what we will also become, because they have a president. So let's be clear that in many instances, it doesn't really mean anything significant. And I do hope that Barbados is a model state in whatever regard that we propose to move on. And secondly, I want to congratulate the government on such a progressive strong speech. It's a very bold step for us to take where we need to be. I also commend Peter on such a great introduction this morning. The strong speech clearly sets a path to deal with COVID, the now, such as the best and post-COVID hope, same-sex marriage, and marijuana. And yes, the marijuana is coming along with the same-sex unions or marriage, depending on however you want to present it. Dr. Brass Tacks, good morning. Good morning and welcome. You're on the air.
Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. Now, Peter, before you go to my point, I want to say this to you. Your last caller is misleading you, because this is not the first time that we are hearing about the environmental problem in Parliament. This is not the first time, Peter. Now, let me go to my point. Now, I want to respond to something that you heard this morning coming from the president of the Democratic Labour Party, Verla de Pisa. And apparently she has some issues with some things that were highlighted in the Jones speech yesterday by the Governor General. And one of her issues, Peter, is that she is claiming that the eradication of the pit toilets is indeed a Democratic Labour Party project. And I said, no, it is not so. Peter, I don't know. I can't remember if it was the first election with Owen Arthur or the second. But I know there was a visit in St. Michael West with former Prime Minister Owen Arthur and Joe Attlee. And they went into a place in Westbury Road, down that side, Richmond's Gap, sorry, called Rotten Town. And they went in another place called All Kings. And I remember clearly, like now, Peter, the former Prime Minister, after those visits, he spoke to the press. And he said that he never knew there was so much poverty in Barbados until he made those visits. And he was mainly concerned about pit toilets in that particular constituency. Can you remember that, Peter?
I vaguely recall, sir.
So to come, whether the people come and say that that was a Democratic Labour Party project, she is indeed misleading the nation. Now, she has a problem with yesterday's Joan speech as well. And she says it's all warm over cold soup. Now, Peter, I listened to initiatives that were highlighted yesterday. And I come to the realization that they are all initiatives to coincide with what we are facing now with the COVID-19. And I heard about 7 or even more new initiatives that I never heard before. But she claimed that the things that were said before is all warm over cold soup. And I can remember, and I say, Peter, to you, that one of the things that I heard yesterday that I never heard before was the $40 million COVID-19 relief program. I don't know where Verla Pizzo was, that she would come and tell me that she heard that before. I heard about the Marijuana Act. I heard also about the home ownership energy program, where we see the construction of 1,000 affordable houses in this country, Peter. So for her, Verla, to come and tell us that is a set of warm-up calls, so I totally disagree. I heard, as I said, and I will repeat, a whole range of new initiatives to guide us through the COVID-19 environment. I thank you, Peter. I don't know if you have anything to say.
All right. No, thanks, sir. Thanks for calling. And look, you know, I heard the comments about the warm over cold soup. There were two things that stood out from the opposition, the leader of the Democratic Labour Party's comments. One was that she supported the Republic. The other was that she refused to comment on the issue of same-sex unions. And the third thing, which was interesting, was that anything else that was good was essentially an initiative of the Democratic Labour Party that was warmed over cold soup. I don't really have a problem with that because, you know, in life, it doesn't matter who started it. It matters who delivers it.
Exactly.
We have been talking for a long time about the 11 plus exam and the need to end it. The Democratic Labour Party expressed this view. The Barbados Labour Party expresses this view. If the Barbados Labour Party does terminate the 11 plus exam, I could care less whose idea it was to end it. The fact that the Prime Minister of Barbados and lead and Minister of the of Education delivered it, they will get kudos for it. And that's really where I am on that conversation. So I continue to argue that the Democratic Labour Party's priorities are in the wrong place. The Democratic Labour Party needs to tell us a bit about their plans to get their election machinery going again, their plans to rescue the party of El Barro, their plans to put a new team of candidates in place. They need to tell us what's going on with this funny business in Dennis Lowe's constituency, whether he is or not the representative. And if he is the representative, if they can find a body else better. And that's my own view. So these are the things that the Democratic Labour Party needs to talk to us about. Don't worry about the Barbados Labour Party, because in the final analysis, I think that the Barbados Labour Party in the short space of 2 years that it has been, has done a whole lot more in many instances the Democratic Labour Party didn't intend. And I mean, that's not hard to prove. So don't worry about the warm over cold soup. Tell us about the party conference. Tell us about whether you're going to defend the presidency. Tell us about the candidates, the 30 candidates. Those, to me, are the issues I want to hear from Verla De Pisa on. And I really do wish Verla De Pisa well, because she's going to come under some heavy pressure in terms of the competition that she's facing from my friend George. And we will see what the outcome is. But I do feel that the question of misplaced priorities is one that has to be placed. All right, sir?
Yeah, but Peter, I think she needs to go and do more research before she comes with these statements.
No, don't worry. She's doing what the opposition leader feels that she needs to do, which is to basically oppose. But, you know, she's not the opposition leader. But, you know, you get my point. All right, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot. Take care.